I have a note and it says, it says, release the children. But formally, at this time, we'd like to call the kids forward. If you've completed grades 1 to 4, you can come forward, and there is, yeah, we've got people waiting there already. This is perfect. And if you're a guest here and you have kids, this is still very open. Your kids are more than welcome to join. There are games, Bible study, small groups, and all kinds of fancy things. So it's a very easy process. So you can just bring your kids up front that way. Thank you.
Release the children. That was great. I love it. My name is Carmen. I'm part of the pastoral team here at The Meeting Place, and today I get to join you as part of the teaching team for the summer, which I'm really excited for. So, thanks. So, we get to continue. We're going through the book of Acts, and the story of how I actually got here up on stage at The Meeting Place isn't a totally direct story. As some of you might know, I'm actually trained as a teacher. I was teaching in a classroom before I got here. But as those of you who are in this room who are teachers know, coming by permanent contracts in the teaching world these days is not so straightforward. So after graduating, I taught for a couple years, and to be honest, I didn't expect to be here. But we're going to unpack that a little more later. So this morning we're focusing on Acts 9, the conversion story of Saul, who becomes the Apostle Paul, one and the same person. If you are already confused by this, I encourage you to stick with me. Okay, we'll get there. Saul was actually first introduced in chapter 8, which we heard about last week, as one of the official witnesses of the killing of Stephen, who was the very first Christian martyr. And immediately following the death of Stephen, we meet Saul. He's out on a mission to destroy the church. He is literally going from house to house, dragging people to jail. He's a religious zealot. He's an official. He's really well-liked among the Jewish establishment and, like, very not liked among those who are followers of Jesus. So this is our context. This is where we're starting, Acts chapter 9. Meanwhile, Saul was uttering threats with every breath and was eager to kill the Lord's followers. So he went to the high priest. He requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of any followers of the way he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. As he was approaching Damascus on this mission, a light from heaven suddenly shone around him. He fell to the ground, and he heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" "Who are you, Lord?" asked Saul. And the voice replied, "I am Jesus, the one that you are persecuting. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what to do." The men with Saul stood speechless, for they heard the sound of someone's voice, but they saw no one. So Saul picked himself up off the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he was blind. So his companions led him by the hand to Damascus, and he remained there blind for 3 days, but did not eat or drink. Saul sees Jesus. He's not out looking for him, but Christ finds him in a pretty dramatic way, right? Have you ever had an experience that was just like totally out of the box, that you weren't expecting, that left you blinded? Or something like it had a really, really big impact on your life, but it actually left you with more questions than with answers? I wonder what Saul was thinking at this point. He's brought to Damascus, he's sitting on the floor, this crazy thing has happened to him, and now he's just blind and alone. So a number of years ago, I'd finished a teaching position, and I had been job hunting for months with no success. I spent the summer literally walking into empty schools because July, everybody's on vacation, right? But I was walking into the schools. I made friends with a lot of caretakers, looking for a principal that might miraculously be there so I could have a conversation and give him my resume. But there was nothing, and so we kept looking and praying, and then literally in the 11th hour, I got a job, which I was so grateful for. We'd been praying all summer that the right job would be offered, and so although it was new, it was something I hadn't done before, we trusted that this is where God wanted me to be. And that next year was one of the hardest seasons of my life. It was so frustrating. I really felt like I was making any progress in the job. I felt alone. It was a struggle. Although I'd made friends, although I had some supports in the school, the position was me working alone. And at the end of the year, my term wasn't renewed, and once again, I was looking for a job. And I looked back on the year, and I wondered, like, we had prayed that God would bring us to the right place, and it just didn't feel like that had happened. Why did it need to happen? Why did I need to go through that? Did my prayers even matter at that point? Have you ever had that feeling? That wondering if God is even listening to you? Where you pray, but you only hear silence? I don't know about you, but there's seasons in my life where prayer is just really hard to figure out. I just feel like I'm still trying to figure it out. Like, I wonder how Saul felt on the floor in Damascus as he was praying. I wonder what that was like. Let's keep reading. Verse 10. Now there was a believer in Damascus named Ananias. The Lord spoke to him in a vision, calling, "Ananias!" "Yes, Lord," he replied. The Lord said, "Go over to Straight Street to the house of Judas, and when you get there, ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul. He is praying to me right now. I've shown him a vision of a man named Ananias coming in and laying hands on him so that he can see again." So what follows in this passage, after this direction from God, is this like serious disagreement from Ananias. He's like, "Lord, are you crazy? Like, do you know who this guy is? I hear a chuckle, but really, like, have you ever argued with God? Like, I've been there. I've been like, you have a pretty good idea of God, what God wants you to do, and you're like, there's no freaking way. No way." I love how this verse is actually translated in The Message, which is a contemporary version of the Bible, where Ananias protests. This is what it says: "Master, you can't be serious. Everybody is talking about this man and the terrible things he's been doing and his reign of terror against Jerusalem, and now he has shown up with papers from the chief priest that gives him license to do the same thing to us." Ananias has got a little bit of sass, hey? A little bit. I love that the Bible is full of stories like this. It is full of stories of people who are confident in their relationship with God to say what they're thinking, to be honest with him, to be in that conversation. Because God responds, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm serious. This man is my chosen instrument." God's response is, "I have a call in this man's life. I have plans for him. He is going to do great things. He is going to be my personal representative to the people, to the Jews and to the non-Jews." So Ananias goes. He shows up and he finds Saul. And when he goes in, he refers to Saul as brother. He doesn't walk in cautiously or with reservation. He's aware of who he's going to meet, the guy who is notoriously known as Christian enemy number one, and he goes in and he greets him as brother, as one of us. He establishes a relationship with Saul that is going to be foundational for what happens next. In the span of 19 verses, we've gone from Saul, who is the killer of all Christians and the enemy of all Jesus followers, to Saul, a baptized believer and follower of Jesus. So I don't know about you, but when I hear stories of such a drastic change like this, like, I get a little bit skeptical. I tend to question the legitimacy of the writer. Like, how true is this story exactly, right? How do they know? So a couple years ago, I was on a plane from Toronto to New York, and a couple of rows in front of me, Mark Ruffalo, like the Hulk, is sitting a few rows in front of me in coach. Okay, now I don't tell you this to tell you how we became best friends, because the reality is that I become embarrassingly starstruck when I see someone that is remotely famous, and the time that I saw Fred Penner in Safeway, I literally forgot why I was there. I was like, I was wandering up and down the aisles like a lost puppy. It was very embarrassing. So, but but I tell you this because if you read in a magazine that Mark Ruffalo flies coach, you'd be like, yeah, maybe. But maybe not, right? Like, he's the Hulk. But the fact that I saw it happen, that adds some legitimacy to the story, right? Albeit flustered, but it proves something. The book of Acts is written by Luke. Luke is the same guy who wrote one of the Gospels. He was an educated man. He was a physician by training, so he's well-learned. His writing and his vocabulary demonstrates this throughout the books. He's a historian. He did a ton of research. He traveled around. He gained a lot of resources for his stories to help write his accounts. And Luke was actually someone that saw Jesus and traveled with Saul. Luke traveled with him. He was there. As we keep reading through the book of Acts, Luke actually changes his vocabulary from third person, from they to we, as he talks about the journeys. So if we look at the story and if we acknowledge the legitimacy of the writer, it moves this story to a whole new level for me. Saul's experience is one of the most famous conversion stories in history. Luke considers it so important he actually writes about it two more times in the book. And why? Because it describes a serious change of heart. Saul's initial mission is to protect what he believes and to kill anybody that disagrees with him. But his motives are totally turned upside down when he sees the one that he is persecuting. Saul, who turns into Paul, is a powerful and credible example that heart transformation is truly possible. The story continues. Saul stays in Damascus for a bit, and immediately he begins preaching about Jesus. He's a powerful communicator. And people are amazed. They're watching and they're listening. Like, this is the same guy who days ago was walking around killing Christians. And now his speaking is so powerful that there's actually a plot to kill him. We're not going to unpack that section right now, but it speaks to the powerfulness of his of what he's doing. So he moves on, and he heads to Jerusalem. And it says in Acts, when Saul arrives in Jerusalem, he tries to meet with the believers, but they're all afraid of him. They don't believe that he has truly become a believer. Then Barnabas brings him to the apostles and told them how Saul had seen the Lord on the way to Damascus and how the Lord had spoken to Saul. Barnabas stands up for Saul. He advocates for him. When nobody is listening, Barnabas stands up and he's like, guys, like, listen to him for a second. This guy is legit. He has seen Jesus. So Saul travels with the apostles. He's preaching and he's telling people about Jesus. And the church had peace. This is the beginning of the story of Saul. It's a pretty crazy story, hey? The same man that was causing all of this turmoil is, sorry, my earring fell out. Hazards of speaking on stage. The same man who caused all this turmoil is now a brother. He is now someone who is speaking for Jesus. He has demonstrated a transformation from the inside out. Do you know somebody where God has done work in their life, but you just don't totally trust it? Is there someone that maybe you need to give a second chance to? Someone that God is ready to use? Somebody unexpected, but maybe we're just not quite ready to listen? As I reflect on these 31 verses that we're looking at, there's two main themes that stick out to me that I'm hoping that we can kind of bring home. So the first one is, where do we need a change of heart? And how do we need a change of heart? In Saul's case, this is not actually a 180-degree move. He's not going from being a God-hating, people-killing person to being a loving Christian. But he is going from being a super devout, religious guy to being a passionate follower of Jesus. Immediately preaching about Jesus in the synagogue, saying that Jesus is indeed the Son of God. Saul goes from living a life of enforcing rules to living out of faith in Jesus. We often look at Saul's conversion literally as we read it, right? As a kind of lightning on the side of the road, blow you away type of conversion. But I think that Jesus was working in Saul's life a lot longer before this actually happened. As a Pharisee, Saul would have heard the reports of Jesus' teachings and heard the reports of the miracles. Is it possible that he might have had some doubts about his own Jewish faith? Because he was waiting for a Messiah too. He would have been waiting for the same signs. We talked about how Saul was a witness of the killing of Stephen. That story includes a captivating speech by Stephen, and the Bible actually describes Stephen's face as glowing like the face of an angel. Saul saw this. Could he have had doubts at that point? Surely that would have had to have an impact on him. And then on the road to Damascus, Jesus appears to him clear as day and brings it all home. So where has Jesus been working in your life? Where has he been nudging you, speaking to you, revealing himself to you? Some people experience Jesus in that crash of a lightning bolt, the sudden conversion from dark to light. And others experience the still small voice of Jesus, speaking into the depths of who they are. The point that I see here is that we're all called to respond to Jesus, and he wants to give us a change of heart. So what kind of change of heart do you need? Is it a change to a genuine and authentic faith? Some of us have called ourselves Christians for years. We know the right words to say. We can pray very eloquent prayers. We can speak words of truth about Jesus. But it stops there. It doesn't inform our decisions, our actions, the way we behave. It's kind of a 10 to 11 a.m. on Sunday morning kind of faith. So what kind of change of heart is God calling you to? Is he calling you to something deeper, to make your faith real, meaningful, and life-changing? Do we need to change from being Christians to being followers of Jesus? Or maybe you are somebody who is hearing this for the very, very first time. This is brand new. Hearing about Jesus, a God who loves us, who pursues us and forgives us, maybe the change of heart that God is calling you to is into a relationship with him, to begin the journey to accept his love and forgiveness. Jesus didn't come into this world just to give us a good story. He came to change lives. He came to invite us into relationship with him because he knew that a life with him is a changed life that would affect everything. This happened to Saul. It affected his job, his friends, his motivation, and it is all happening for the purpose of furthering the good news of Jesus Christ. So the second theme that I notice is that Saul is not doing this alone. He has mentors that are walking with him. Saul, like, let's be honest, he's not the guy that people would have been betting money on to be the new spokesperson for Jesus. But he was a man of power and influence. He was preaching a different message until Christ pursued him. But once Saul experienced Jesus, a change of heart and change of perspective, his reputation still precedes him, right? How is he going to convince people that he has changed? How is he actually going to get them to listen? So the two people that I notice here are Ananias and Barnabas. God calls Ananias to make a connection with Saul. And he's anxious about it, but he does it. And it is because of this connection that Saul begins to preach. It is because of Ananias' investment that he begins on this new path that he is not qualified for, he's not trained for, but he is called to. So after I finished that last term position, I spent months again unemployed looking for a job. And after months, the phone rang, and I knew the man at the other end of the phone because I'd actually interviewed at his organization previously. He didn't know my situation. He didn't know that I was unemployed. But he's like, so we have this opening, and your name came to mind. So we started a conversation, and there were some conversations, there were some interviews and reference checks, and the job sounded awesome, but I wasn't qualified for it, or so I felt. although I had some volunteer experience with a similar organization. My university training was in a totally different field, and my direct experience was with a very different age demographic. But yet we continued talking, and I tested the job with a lot of friends and a lot of mentors, people who had known me for a really long time, who knew my character, who knew my gifts and my abilities, and knew what I could be capable of. And after some time, the job was offered to me here at the meeting place. And now, almost 3 years later, I look on how this would have never been a possibility for me if it wasn't for mentors in my life who took me under their wing, who vouched for me, who encouraged me, who taught me, who gave an opportunity to learn about who God was calling me to be. Cheryl, who invested in me as a teenager and sat with me. Cam, who gave me internship opportunities and listened to a million questions. Marianne, who has sat with me and listened as I wrestled through decisions. These are just a few of my Ananiases and Barnabases. Barnabas is another one of Saul's mentors. It says in the message that Barnabas took Saul under his wing. He introduced him to the apostles. He stood up for him, and he told them how Saul had seen the master on Damascus Road and how in Damascus itself he had laid down his life with his bold preaching in Jesus' name. Barnabas took Saul under his wing. He advocated for him when nobody was listening. We need these people in our lives, and we need to be these people. Socrates mentored Plato, who in turn mentored Aristotle. Award-winning author and poet Maya Angelou mentored Oprah Winfrey, who has in turn impacted millions of people. Steve Jobs took Mark Zuckerberg under his wing in the beginning days of Facebook. And God sent his son Jesus to earth, and Jesus didn't march along and do it all by himself, but he gathered 12 young men, like truly young, like teenagers, and he walked along with them and he mentored them. If you reflect on your own life, where have there been circumstances where people have spoken into your life and mentored you? And who is the person in your life that could use some guidance? Someone to walk with them and someone to teach them. Good mentoring relationships rarely happen by accident. Ananias would not have accidentally stumbled upon Saul if God hadn't called him to be there. He was willing to follow the promptings of the Holy Spirit. I think that a lot of us have points in our lives where we think that we can't do something. Because of our situation, we think that we're not a viable option. In the same breath, I think that we all have. Sorry, I'll stop touching it. Better. I think that we all have moments where we could call someone alongside and we could teach them the ropes and we could guide them, but we don't because that takes more time and it would just be faster and more efficient to do it by yourselves. Allow me to challenge us on both points. First of all, I think that we strongly all need to have mentors in our lives, people who have walked the road, people to impart wisdom, to guide us, to walk us through our mistakes, and to help us to learn from them. And I also think that we need to be a mentor, to acknowledge that we all have something to offer and to be willing to share what we have, to follow the call that God has in our lives, to be a disciple and to make disciples for him. Saul was one of the least likely people to be an advocate for Christ, but once he experienced Jesus, he became a catalyst for the growth of the church, and his story is still told and retold as evidence of Christ's unlimited patience and grace for his people. God had a plan for Saul's life that involved a personal change of heart that would impact the change of countless hearts based on Saul's teaching and good news about Jesus. Recognizing that Jesus is calling us to a change of heart sometimes sounds scary. It might sound intimidating, but I'm reminded about how Jesus pursues Saul and how he pursues us. This change of heart is not about us. It's about Jesus. It's about saying a resounding yes and allowing Jesus in to do the miraculous, life-changing work that he does and accept his grace. I would not be here today if it was not for God's grace. If it was not for people who saw something in me years before I did and who had the patience to walk with me and to guide me and teach me. My journey is far from over, and I have tons still to learn. But I am so grateful that I have mentors in my life who are willing to continue to walk with me and to guide me forward. And as a result, I am reminded to do the same. I'm reminded that God had a call in Saul's life, and he has a call in all of our lives. And it is not a call of being passive or hiding behind a curtain, but we are being called to a change of heart. If you're here today and you are familiar with these motions, the words in the story, but you haven't made it real in your life, can I challenge you to consider what it might make to take that happen? What are you waiting for? Are you waiting for God to yell it from the rooftops, but you're so busy looking up that you don't see that he's sitting right next to you? He's nudging you. He's talking to you. He's inviting you into something bigger than you maybe could have ever imagined. God speaks through his people. He speaks through our mentors. So are we listening? Jesus came and died to forgive us of our sins so that we could be in relationship with him. Jesus chose to call us as disciples into a relationship so that we could learn from him and that we could be led by him. And in turn, that we would go and make disciples of all nations, and that everybody that we speak and interact with, we would tell about Jesus, and that they would know without a doubt the love of Jesus, and that it all starts for us with a change of heart. So that's what I have for us today. We're not actually going to sing a song right now, but my good friend Britt is going to make his way. I told him I'd give him a heads up, and I didn't. Britt, come on up. So if you haven't texted in questions, this is now your chance. Be nice. But this is one of my favorite parts of the service, is to be able to text in questions and for us to just dialogue a little bit about the conversation this morning. So how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I have to get things ready. Hey, Carmen.
Oh, hey.
Thank you very much for sharing your own life. You shared about being persistent in your pursuit of a job. Explain the relationship between our own efforts and the things we can trust Jesus to look after. So there's obviously kind of a practical side, but also can you talk about the relationship between our own efforts, the stuff we do, and the stuff we can trust Jesus to look after?
Good start. I think God has made us to be people who can make decisions and who can respond to our circumstances. And so I think that when we talk about being called to something, you know, if I say, God has called me here. If I just sat in my basement and I never answered the phone and I never had conversations with anybody, it would be really hard for me to get from there to here, right? And so I think that there is a certain level of responsibility that we have because God has given us gifts to be able to be in conversation and to be in relationship. And I think that's part of our role in following. Am I off base here?
No. Okay. So do you think it's like column A and column B with a clear divider between the two, like our lives and what Jesus takes care of?
I think that they interact. Yeah. Like I think that with each action, if we are prayerfully moving forward and praying that God will lead us, that he will lead our words, that he'll lead our actions, lead us into relationships and conversation. And hopefully that we also have mentors that are guiding us through that too. And so we talk about community a lot here, doing stuff in community, people who can speak into our lives and into our circumstances. I think that they go hand in hand.
Cool. You talked about Saul/Paul's change of heart, his motive. How does someone check their motive if they're unsure? How's that done?
Another great question. again, I think that I would come back to community as a really heavy influencer, whether you're part of a small group or if you have a mentor or a close friend, someone who knows the truest part of you and motives. I think that also, if we are spending time in prayer, if we're spending time reading the Bible and spending time pursuing God, and if that is our goal, then we trust that our motives are pure. And I think that we all end up in circumstances where we're selfish beings, and we end up in moments where we do things where we're like, well, our motives maybe weren't pure in that moment, but that's also an opportunity to come home at the end of the day and be like, you know what, God, I realize that I was really all in it for me today, but that's not what I want to be about. I want to be about Jesus, and I want to be about Jesus being communicated through my actions, and let's try again tomorrow. And so we have the opportunity to come to Jesus to ask for forgiveness and for grace to move on again the next day.
Cool. One more.
Okay.
I'm a little older, and I'm willing to try being a mentor, but I'm not sure what I have to offer. Should I try?
Yes.
Good answer.
Yes, you should. Yeah. And
there were a number of people that texted in with the uncertainty of, like, I'm kind of a mess myself. Yeah. I don't know how much I can help out other people. So do I even try?
Yeah. I think that such a great question. I think that when we think about a mentor, we're like, oh, that person's got it all together, right? That person has all the right answers. They've made their mistakes, and now they're done making mistakes, and now they are a person worth following, right? But let's be honest, like, I don't think that we ever reach that point in our lives. No offense, if you feel like you have reached that point, please come talk to me.
Talk to me if you have.
I would love to learn from you. But I think that is one of the beauties of a mentoring relationship, is that we're learning together. And that as much as I am learning from my mentor, I trust that they're also learning from me. And for those that I've mentored, I get to share and say, you know what, I made a mistake this week. I made a decision that this wasn't the best thing ever. But for us to get to learn together along that journey, and just to be willing to be in that more intentional relationship. Sometimes we think about mentoring relationships too. I know I've talked to people where they say, sorry, I'm just going on and on
here. Keep going.
Well, I don't know if I can do this for the rest of my life. But I've had really significant mentoring relationships that have lasted 6 months. Or a year, or they've been for a season, or they've been to walk through a very specific journey. And there are so many of us that have experience, and just being willing to listen in conversation, we have something to offer. So, yeah, I'm going to put in a plug here. If you are interested in being a mentor, please come and talk to me, or come and talk to one of us on staff, because we always have people who come who are looking for mentors, and we would love to, we call as many people as we can, but if you think, you know, I'd be interested in this, I'm curious about it, I think that's the Holy Spirit speaking. I really do. So pursue that.
Cool. I'm just, as you're speaking, I'm so reminded, when I was asked to be a mentor, I had the same response of going,
Yeah.
Brits, are you sure you've got the right person? And I've got a standing date with someone every 2 weeks, and what I used to look at is, oh, what am I going to give to this? I receive far more than I give.
So totally.
Thank you for giving us so much to think about this morning and sharing.
Thank you very much. Hey, so thank you for the questions that we got to talk about, and for those of you, if you texted in questions but we didn't get to them, feel free to come up here after the service and we can have a bit more of a conversation, or call us at the office. We always want to continue those conversations. Before you go, I would love to send you with a passage from 2 Corinthians that says, Christ's love controls us. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life. He died for everyone, so that those who receive his new life would no longer live for themselves. Instead, they would live for Christ, who died and who was raised for them. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone, and a new life has begun. If you have never had an opportunity to embrace this new life that Jesus offers to us, I would love to talk to you about it. there is a prayer team that's up here at the end of the service. One of us would love to talk to you about it, or find someone that you trust, that you know that loves Jesus. And if you have been walking with Jesus for a long time, but you're sensing that God is calling you to a change of heart, I challenge you to lean into that. See where God's calling you. Spend some time in prayer and see, because our old lives are gone, right? This is the new beginning. So let's celebrate that. This is good news. Thanks for listening. Thanks for walking with us today, and to the band for playing. And I hope you all have a great week.